Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bit. What's good, internet? It's awesome. I'm gonna keep this. I was gonna come in and sing Auld Lang Syne because it is January. No, it's not January yet. It is still as of this recording and as of this release, December 31st, 2018. It is the last day of the year, and we are looking forward here at Waypoint Radio. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot? And Auld Lang Syne. It's like the old fat. For the good old days. Should we just think ahead for the good old days? Think back. Think positive. Be positive. New year. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, Patrick Klepek.
I want to live in this future where my kid's not sick. I've not slept for 2 days, but I'm ready. I'm here for it. I don't give a shit. I'm ready.
All right, we're gonna knock out a couple pods today, and you'll be good to go. Rob Zachney also here. Are you excited to live in the future?
Yeah, the future's been nothing but good. Every time the present becomes the future, I'm like, this is better than I thought, saw things going. That's been the arc of my life and my political experience. So, hell yeah, bring that future on.
Well, guess what? We're starting out good. January. I'm just going to jump into it. Today, we're going to look ahead at the future. I'm just going to jump into it. We're going to go through the preview of what 2019 has in store for us. In the world of gaming, not necessarily in the world of heating up presidential primaries, not in the world of global economic crisis, not in the world of the world getting hotter over and over and over again. We're just going to look at video games today and be happy and positive. And that's why I'm so excited to talk to you about fitness boxing on the Nintendo Switch, the first release of the year. I'm going to get fit next year. I'm going to do it. I'm going to pick up Fitness Boxing, an upcoming Exer Gaming video game developed by Imagineer and published by Nintendo exclusively on the Nintendo Switch. That's the first video game of 2019. It has a playlist. Wait, this looks all right.
It's been published by Nintendo, so...
Yeah, I'm linking this. I didn't know this existed.
Fitness Boxing contains a playlist of instrumental versions of popular pop songs.
That's what I'm saying. I can punch to an instrumental version... of Avril Lavigne's Girlfriend. So, hey, well, you can't, there won't be lyrics, so it's ba 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 ba. Yeah, perfect.
Oh, Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe.
There you go.
Actually, her worst sing, there are far better Carly Rae Jepsen songs to pick.
We know that you're, I know.
I'm just saying.
Also, wait, there's like one chord strike that you could really throw a punch to in Call Me Maybe. Like, what else? I don't know.
It's just a really good punch.
It is.
Two Maroon 5 songs.
Oh,
I got excited that Pitbull was on the soundtrack, but no, it's a Kesha Timber song.
That song's all right. Kesha's good. Anything that gives Kesha money, I'm happy for.
Can Kesha Timber Pitbull featuring Pitbull? Can it get, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Owl City and Carly Rae Jepsen. That's not a feature, Patrick. That's just a whole nother Carly Rae Jepsen track.
Oh,
depending
on
how you feel about Owl City, you know?
Eh.
LMFAO's Party Rock Anthem, which, as we all know, of course, is the same BPM as Cruel Angel's Thesis, the intro of Evangelion. So I'm here for it, because that means I can just take that punch track, whatever the route is, and just slide it over onto Cruel Angel's Thesis, and it should make perfect sense.
What I'm going to love is when all these instrumental versions turn out to be like Tranquil Moods piano covers of these songs. And you're just like, you're standing there in your workout gear and your fucking headband, you're ready to go. Suddenly just like a major key piano solo.
Hey, can we look at the genre this is in?
What is it? What's it say?
Exer gaming? Is that a thing?
Gaming. That's a thing.
Is that a Exergaming?
Well, so here's the thing. This is the thing.
Who gave that a term?
Nintendo, probably. The game is part of Nintendo's Fit series, but does not use the Wii Fit trainer. The default coach is Lynn, and there are a total of 5 other coaches, 3 female, 2 male, each with customizable appearances. Where the fuck is the Wii Fit trainer? Bring me back the Wii Fit trainer. Did the Wii Fit trainer get fired? What happened to the Wii Fit trainer? I would like to know what the status of the employment is of the Wii Fit trainer. Reggie, call me.
Well, she's in Smash Brothers, right?
Yeah, but like, is that a contract deal, or is that like, is she salaried? Does she have health benefits? And him,
if Smash Bros. Ends, like
think
the
they
WWE.
Cover anybody. Yeah,
you think that's they're all filing 1099s. They are definitely independent contractors.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Nobody's getting coverage. Oh, so you're Smash Brother? Do I have that right? let me ask you: how many times would you estimate you've lost a stock in the last year being bashed off a canyon edge into an infinite abyss? Just ballpark. Dozen times?
I think the Smash Brothers deserve insurance is all I'm saying. I think they put their lives on the line for us. They're braver than the troops.
Why should people who are not getting bashed into the infinite beyond pay the insurance costs of Smash Brothers? I just don't see it.
When you talk to Reggie 83...
I'll bring it up
next year. We're asking every developer about labor questions, about unionization questions. What's up with the contract status of the Smash Brothers?
Of the Smash
community?
Brothers. Please.
This brings us a step closer, though, to like, what if for the Switch they bring back Ubisoft Key Party?
Oh my God.
What I'm saying.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We're going to move on and see if that shows up. Next up, Mario and Luigi's Bowser's Inside Story and Bowser's Journey. There, that's not it. No, Bowser's in... Bowser Jr. had to come from somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Bowser Jr. had to come from somewhere. So, that Bowser Jr.'s Journey is like an expansion to Bowser's Inside Story, which is like...
It's a remake, right?
Yeah, it's a remake plus a little extra... And a little extra is Bowser Jr. I'm curious.
I played that one. I played
people like
ones
it a lot.
I played the ones that were on the GBA. I don't think I played any of the Mario
the
and Luigi
ones.
Games on the DS.
Yeah, this is the one where you go inside of Bowser.
Yeah,
that's why it's
that
called that. You go in there and you look around and make sure he's okay.
What's in there?
You gotta play to find out. You know what I'm saying? Play to find out what happens. You know, figure out.
Giant Bomb's Brad Shoemaker gave the game a 5 out of 5, and the website later named it the best DS game of 2009.
Wow, were you there at the time? 2009.
No, I'm reading the Wikipedia page and I'm just seeing the reception.
Oh,
the third installment of the Mario Brothers handheld RPG is the funniest and most engaging one yet.
Can you imagine a world where Giant Bomb is still doing platform awards? Oh, the best GBA game of 2009 is.
It's an all-around fantastic portal game. It's completely worth playing, whether you enjoy it in bite-sized chunks or plow straight through it from start to finish. Thanks, Brad.
Shout out to Brad. I love you, Brad. Please don't be stressed about politics, Brad.
next up. 2019.
Yeah, that's my New Year's resolution.
Because it seems like 2019, yeah, we're headed down to ratcheting things down a notch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe is coming out.
I'm excited for this.
You like that game a lot, Patrick.
I did not play this one.
Didn't play New Super Mario Brothers? You?
This is the Wii U one. So I played and really enjoyed New Super Mario Brothers on the Wii. I think I largely finished that game 4-player. Like, we all just got together with some friends one night and got some beers and just, like, plowed our way through the entirety of the game. And it was, like, not a good platformer, but, like, it was a really fun, different way to play a game like that. Especially given, like, we were playing with my wife, who largely doesn't play games and often will shy away from playing games because she doesn't want to look like she doesn't know what she's doing. Like, just doesn't want to be embarrassed. I don't blame anyone for that. And so that game with the bubbles and just it made it fun where you could just goof around and fuck off and not be any good and you were still making progress.
Right.
But I had heard that New Super Mario Bros. U, and I think famously, Jeremy Parrish, one of gaming's historians, wonderful critic, who released that amazing accessory for the Switch, actually.
That thing is cool as hell, yeah.
I mean, he didn't make it himself. He did it in collaboration with...
He designed it in his garage.
Fan Gamer?
I think it was Fan Gamer, yeah.
So, to allow you to play... vertical shooters on your Switch by rotating it.
You rotate it and like put it in, yeah.
So, good dude. Worked with him for years, and he's done stuff for Waypoint that's great as well. But I believe he did a ranking of the best Mario Brothers games and put this at the top?
Yeah, that was for Polygon. He did that. And that was the most Jeremy Parrish thing he could have done was like, what is the best Mario game? It's none of the ones you're guessing it is.
And
right?
I don't know his motivation. I know that in ranking my own list, sometimes you put things at the top because you're trying to make a statement as well. Like, I don't know. Maybe he truly believes it is number one. Or by putting it number one, if you put it number two or three, you're not saying much about, like, it's not going to grab people. So, but I've heard continually in the wake of that, that this game actually has some really terrific level design, that you need to get over the fact that the art sucks. And that if you are just fundamentally interested in a really good Mario platformer, that this is a radically overlooked one. So I just bounced on it because I was like, I don't need another one of these when the Wii U came out. Yeah. But now I'm excited to sit down and actually play. And it's supposed to like be a decent game even if you're just playing solo. So,
Rob, you had your hands in a prayer.
So I had a dream the other night. I'd forgotten about this until Patrick mentioned it.
I'm so happy we're here.
I did a ranking all the Total War games piece ages ago over at Rock, Paper, Shotgun.
And I thought you did this in your dream.
No. The piece is real.
I dreamt of a world in which...
in which I could do a top games list at Rock, Paper,
Shotgun. Rob is moving the Overton window of what... Mm-hmm. We're talking about trying to increase our expectations of what is possible politically. And in Rob's 2019, he can write a list of the best Total War games.
I'd let you do it, Rob. If you pitched it to me, Listen, the people in the traffic department here would love it if we just did a bunch of fucking top 10 lists.
They would.
So, in that list, though, I made the argument that, like, Rome Total War, the original one, was, like, super popular, but also fucks up the series because it's actually not a very good game, and its popularity kind of skews what Creative Assembly are trying to do with the series. Last night, I had a vivid dream where I was playing Rome Total War, and I liked it way more than I remembered. And I was like, oh, no. This is a great game. I was just going for a spicy take. And then Rowan Kaiser descended from the sky.
Wow.
And said, I told you this was a better game than you give it credit for being. I used to make mods for it.
Is that true?
I think so. I think he's,
that sounds like a thing Rowan would do.
Yeah, I think he was part of a mod team trying to make, I don't know, the most... probably the most pretentious Total War mod.
I just need you to know that whenever anyone begins a thing with like a, I had a dream last night, and I'm very serious voice, I hear it all in the voice of Pontius Pilate from Jesus Christ Superstar, dreaming of what happens to Jesus. So now Rowan Kaiser has descended like Jesus into your Roman occupational palace to tell you you were wrong about Total War Rome, which really just plays all the way through. It lines everything up. So nice work. Parrish in this list says that of all of the myriad sequels of Super Mario Bros. 3, New Super Mario Bros. U does the best job of wrapping everything great about Mario, both old and new, into a single package. He's written some stuff here that makes me think, oh yeah, this sounds like a good one. So
it is the thing that I was gonna probably play this anyway because I'm just jonesing for a new Mario game and it's gonna be a while till there's a new proper one. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that and I was like, shit! Like now he's got me thinking I've got a blind. Like I just dismissed that out of hand, despite like being you know the Mario guy, especially at Waypoint. It's like, all right, now I need to figure that one out for myself. So I'm psyched that that's early in the year.
Totally. There is, I want to be clear for people who are listening at home, obviously there are other games that are coming out around these and before them. We just have up the Wikipedia entry. We also have up a story from Games Radar, which has some slight differences because like that also has a game called Catastronauts, which is hitting Switch.
There's probably a lot of indie stuff.
There's a lot of indie stuff that won't be on this list. But I'm going to try to look out for things that I know look cool on both of these lists. And there's stuff that won't be on the list, on any list, because it's indie, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, Tales of Vesperia, Definitive Edition, which is a repackage of a past Tales JRPG. I've not played any of the Tales games. I watched Tales of Symphonia in college, but it's one of many JRPG series.
Symphonia is a GameCube one?
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because that kind of, like, for a while there was... Yeah. Like a Nintendo exclusive series.
Yes, totally. People who had the GameCube were like, yeah, well, we get the Tails games. And I was like...
I don't mean to laugh because I know people like those games.
People like those games.
But. I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, it's not Final Fantasy. Then again, Final Fantasy wasn't very good at that point.
No, it wasn't. Speaking of remakes, re-releases, what is up with this Onimusha Warlords?
It's the first game, right?
Is it a remake of the first game or is it just a re-release of the first game?
It's a re-release. I think, you know, scale-upped...
Okay, you know, but no standard new This is not Resident Evil 2.
No.
We'll get to. No.
I mean, you would hope that, like, this is setting the stage for, like, that Capcom seems like they're setting themselves up to be doing what Disney is doing with all of their cartoon franchises right now, which is, like, you know, they played around with doing just straight up updates, which is what this is just doing a high-res update that, you know, it'll run on your PC and in modern machines and get cleaned up a little bit. But then it's like, yo, that sold surprisingly well. Go do the remake before you go do the big, or you do those things concurrently, you know, to feed off each other. Because, you know, I mean, this is jumping ahead, but the RE2 one that comes out later in the month, like, that is not a remake. That is more of a reimagining reboot. It isn't just a remaster.
It is really, truly starting
from the ground
up.
New story threads. It is, you know, it's from what I've played, from what I've read, you know, that game's going to keep, you know, a lot of the same beats. You know, it's not like the ending is going to be different necessarily, but, like, they want to surprise players, and they're not necessarily trying to be one-to-one faithful. I think they're trying to be faithful in the sense of, like, if you loved Resident Evil 2, it's going to have all the stuff you loved in Resident Evil 2, but it's not going to be, you went down this hallway and go down that hallway, and it's, like, a better version looking of that, which I think is the right way to approach that. The bit I played at E3 this year seemed really good and genuinely scary in a way that just a repackaged RE2 wouldn't be.
Right.
I'm curious, because Onimusha, despite loving the RE games and this just being Samurai RE, just I never played any of the Onimusha games.
They're not as good. I mean, straight up. Like, I played that original Onimusha. Like, you know, it was near, for me in my head, it was near enough the launch of the PS2 that it was like, oh, hell yeah, let's see what this system can do. And at the time, it was like mind-blowing. But this, at the same time, like, there wasn't a lot to it. It was, like, a lot of lovingly crafted environments. But there wasn't a whole lot of, like, great game there.
Wasn't it really short, too?
It was
I remember famously being, like really, like oh, no. Like, this game's, like, 4 hours long.
Yeah, it's incredibly short. It ends very abruptly. And the other thing is that, if I recall, like, just major characters in that series that are, like, you know, crucial to the first game kind of just get discarded. They just vanish in, like, a puff of smoke. And it's
that game's over. Yeah.
And at that point, like, so that's the weird thing. It's like, okay, cool that you're bringing this back. But at the same time, that was an experience that wasn't particularly beloved. I don't think, like, it's a well-known name. But in my head, like, it's far from a classic. So I'm really curious what's going on here.
Onimusha was planned by Capcom as a trilogy. Its first title was originally developed for the PlayStation, but the project was moved to the PS2. Mm-hmm. The PlayStation version was scrapped and never released. It was about 50% complete before it was canceled. Onimusha's team's excitement about the PS2's capabilities resulted in that change. It originated as literally just Ninja Resident Evil, which, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay, that makes sense. I'm going to go back really quick because I've now watched a video of Catastronauts, which has a great name, and that game looks cool as shit. So we should check that out. That is game.
Can you put the trailer in our?
The thing that I'm just going to say about it, you know, we don't need to really sit it or hit it for a long time, but it is Xbox, PS4, Steam, Switch, and it looks like FTL Overcooked. So, like, a little bit like Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, but more like Overcooked in that it's like an isometric perspective, and you're just like running around your ship fixing things and like loading your torpedoes and. It just looks goofy, good time.
Oh, this is out already on PC.
Oh, is it? Is like early access? Oh, it's like out on PC. All right, well.
It's out on PC. It came out back in September.
There you go. I wonder if that game is any good. I'll play that on Switch.
It has mostly positive reviews.
There you go. Shout outs to review systems.
Mostly positive reviews?
No. They're not cats. Kato said, are they cats? I also thought they were cats. They're not. Cats would be. I bet you can unlock a cat. If they know what's good for them, you can unlock a cat. Also coming out in January, they're re-releasing the Yakuza 4. There's a remaster on Yakuza 4. They're continuing down that line. This is not a Kiwami. This is not Yakuza 4 Kiwami. The Kiwami games that were coming out for Kiwami 1, Kiwami 2 were like completely redone PS2 games that had completely new graphics put in, some new storyline stuff. And these are not that, as far as I know. I'm going to keep moving. Yik or Y2K? Yeek? Yeek? I don't know how to pronounce Y2K. It's Y-I-I-K.
They showed, a trailer for that during the Kind of Funny.
They did. They've been showing. So I've been seeing this game at like PAXs for years, right? It is an Earthbound.
The pitch is always it's Earthbound in Japan, right? Basically,
I don't know if it's actually in Japan. Is it actually in? Because it's a Western team that's making it, and it's a very My read of it was like it's Earthbound in the 90s. It's Earthbound, but a 90s indie movie, or not a 90s indie movie, an indie movie by a 90s kid. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, sure, yeah.
You fight with vinyl records. You have a Walkman. There was a piece a few years ago that we did, or I guess Zach Koster did for us, about kind of what its inspirations were last year. I'm glad it's finally coming out. It's been one of those things. It's like I've been waiting for it for a long time, and so I'm curious to see how it is. It has a really cool style. Has kind of not like cell shaded, but like there's a sort of a comic booky vibe with it, I would say. It looks kind of neat.
It's like a lot of flat shaded textures. Kind of like a really clean PS1 game.
That's a good way of thinking about it. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in the way that like sometimes when folks do like, oh, we made an 8-bit game, but it's not like there's making like an 8-bit or a 16-bit game and like limiting yourself to the technical limitations of that hardware, or are you just inspired by the aesthetic and then you're sort of like, what can we do with that aesthetic in 2018? And
right.
that's kind of the vibe I get
totally
from the look of this game.
Totally. And it looks like, you know, like a lot of JRPGs that it's clearly inspired by, like very active or interactive combat stuff. Like it's menu based, but you're like, oh, jam on the button or hit these buttons in this order to do extra combos, stuff like that. It really does have a good look. I think Cameron Kunzelman is going to take a look at this for us and maybe
the humor is going to be the big question mark on that, 100%. Right? So it's like if for what they're saying they're going for, that would be easy to miss on.
100%. Rob, have you played the Ace Combat games? Because Ace Combat 7 is out in January also, January 18th.
No.
No, you never fucked around with those in your...
I mean, I think they've always fallen...
Yeah, go ahead.
So the thing is, let's go back to 90s PC gaming real quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The sim genre used to be like one giant happy family, and there were like more serious sims like Falcon 3.0 for ages, and then later Falcon 4.0, or like basically your hardest of hardcore that became the DCS series of today, the equivalent, where basically you're trying to model like one-to-one every system aboard a military aircraft. And then there was lighter stuff that, you know, secret weapons of the Luftwaffe.
Right.
But in general, like, sim players kind of played all of it. And then things really started to diverge, and, like, the sim lights got lighter and lighter and had less to do with, like, anything approaching actual flying. And it became more like arcade games that were closer to, like, Top Gun than, like, Jane's Longbow, for instance. I've always sort of regarded Ace Combat as a little bit more in that, like, arcade to the point of 100. Not really being my jam.
Okay. So I think you're right. Probably, especially for Rob of that era, where you had your flight needs met by good simulators. And I was playing both of these things at the time, right? I was definitely like playing the Janes and the there was another major flight, or like, you know, I was straight up just playing flight simulators still. Like I was straight up just like, wow, it's fun to be in a plane. It's fun to figure out how to like turn all of these settings up all the way and take a plane off a runway. But I was also in the need. I had the Need for Speed. I don't think that played, but I did the teeth bite, which is probably the thing I shouldn't do with my fucked up teeth. And also the thing I liked is what's that thing called? Anime. I liked anime a lot. And these motherfucking games go to some weird war anime places eventually. With
good war anime.
It's war anime. More serious than like Valkyria Chronicles. Like, okay. It's not.
Valkyria serious. though.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it doesn't even have... At no point in Ace Combat 4 do you get into a fight with a rival, like, a rival flight platoon. That's not what those are called. Flight group, whatever. Inside of the courtyard of a town you're occupying over bread. Which That's is true. Something that happens in Valkyria Chronicles 4. You do take over a town, decide to buy their bread. There isn't enough for two different companies, and you decide, let's have a paintball match in around the homes of the people we're occupying, and it'll seem like a good, fun time.
Patrick, that game owns. We'll talk about it soon.
That game does fucking own. It's on my list, too. So Ace Combat 7 hits. I played the VR version of the VR stuff in this last year. And that
yeah,
kind
I played
of,
that at E3. It was pretty cool.
That stuff is cool. That stuff just feels really cool. The, like, punching through the clouds to get up to, like, the higher level, just, like, whew, really cool. I'll check that out, probably. Also out, did I just jump past? No, I didn't. It's releasing twice, I see. Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes. This is a new No More Heroes? What is this?
I've briefly seen it at various events.
It's Switch.
The way Suda 51 has positioned it is that, inspired by a lot of the indie games he's loved, you know, over the years, he wanted to both collaborate and incorporate, like, there's characters from, like, the games are escaping me, but, like, various indie games are going to have some iconography or characters that kind of weave in and out of a bunch of these smaller scale, I don't know if they're quite mini games, I think they're more on the mini game side, you know, that you're interacting with. Like, this isn't, what you wanted was a third entry that's, like, a large scale brawler in the vein of what 1 and 2 were. Like, this is not that, and to that end, like, both the couple of times I've seen it, it hasn't really... I mean, maybe it'll be fine. I didn't actually sit down and play it, but there wasn't much... those games were fine for the time. Like, I don't know that I was, like, chomping at the bit for, like, a third Travis game. So, I don't know. I don't have, like, strong feelings on it one way or the other.
Yeah, I feel you. Let's keep moving. Resident Evil 2. This is maybe the first, like... drop everything release for me this year.
And they're picking the same spot as RE7. Like, they have stumbled upon like a Capcom basically, like, 8 months out has just been positioning things, at least for Resident Evil, in, like, the January slot. That's where RE7 dropped, and this is where RE2 dropped, and it's, like, a really cool, interesting time for them to stake out for, like, a big tentpole release.
Every trailer I watch of this game makes me more excited about it. I liked RE2 a lot when it first came out. I've never gone back to it. I still have the memory of, like, trying to unlock hidden characters and doing weird runs of that game.
I was never able to do tofu. Which requires you to beat the game in under 3 hours or something ridiculous like that. I mean, I did some of those speed runs in, like, a GoldenEye sort of fashion, but I think I just game sharked my way into tofu just so I could see. So, for people who don't know, like, there's like, there are speed runs you can do of RE2 or beating the game in different ways to unlock what they call different scenarios. Like, the RE games would constantly have these little secrets that, like, allowed you to play as a different character so you could see the action from a different angle. And one of them was tofu, who is literally a walking piece of tofu. That can
one of them.
Zombies.
One of them was, like, an umbrella soldier named Hunk.
Yes. Yes. Hunk. Yeah, yes. Hunk. The Hunk scenario.
The
yes.
Hunk scenario. Yeah. Totally. That game. So it's. We've talked about it before. If you go back and listen to our E3 stuff, we can hear Patrick having seen it. It has such a strong aesthetic to it. It's so interesting to me because it is not continuing the push that RE7 did in terms of, like, that close first person, intimate, like, truly frightening stuff.
Well, I think
they're doing both.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is like, does this mark, like, okay, we're going to sort of update Resident Evil 2, and that's going to be our direction here? Because that direction ultimately leads to where the series kind of peters out. Or are we going to see something else along the lines of RE7, which I think we all agreed also rocked in its own way?
Yeah,
yeah. They've already said that the RE7 team is working on their own thing. Like, these are separate teams.
Cool.
And that whatever the RE7 team is working on, which I'm sure is just RE8, it's like trying to take the lessons of RE7 and go from there. I'm worried still about it, though, that the lessons from RE7, which sold well, but wasn't as big of a hit, from what I understand, as Capcom was hoping, that they don't lean into the action part of it. I thought like the first half of RE7 runs like a really fine line, and then especially the last third of that game just turns into a shitty action game that I didn't particularly care for. So I'm curious. But I think it's cool that they're doing both. Like, I think it's neat to see them go back and sort of reimagine to a limited degree what those older games are. I'm actually, as much as I'm excited to go back to RE2, like, I'm more excited to see them, like, reimagine, like, the more divisive ones, like an RE3, which people remember, you know, the Nemesis character. But that game was not nearly the success that RE1 or 2 was. That was kind of, like, the beginning of Capcom sequelizing that series at a rate that was starting to burn it out before they, you know, completely reinvented it with RE4. So
right, I mean, think this feels like, I mean, like the quick glance at the way gameplay looks gives you RE4 vibes. It gives you like, okay, this is a third person horror, you know, survival horror game. My hope is, you know, limited on the ammo. Let me be really, you know, frightened about getting into combat scenarios. Make me want to run and use a knife instead of blowing through all my ammo. I don't know. Like it, there was something about the look of it that makes me very excited, which is like a strange thing, or not a particularly helpful or useful way to characterize excitement. It's just like, I don't know, man. I look at it, I get excited. Like, but I am, for whatever reason. I think maybe it's because I know enough of the beats. I still remember enough of the beats. I was like, oh man, I want to see how they redo that stuff. There was just like a genuine curiosity about it as a project. That makes me pretty. I'm anticipating it as a fun thing to do early in the year. You know. Also,
yeah,
I want the popcorn. Like, part of it for me is it's gonna be a big popcorn game for me.
Well, it's the aliens to alien jump for that franchise. Yeah. I mean, it's still more RE1 than RE4. You know, which kind of takes that to its sort of logical, more extreme conclusion.
Yeah.
Actually, that's more like RE6, honestly. But It's horror-y, but not nearly to the degree that RE1 was. And so I'm curious. It seems like they're actually taking RE2 and trying to push it closer tonally to Resident Evil 1.
Right.
Which is interesting because I preferred that as much as I really loved RE2. Mm-hmm. And so I actually just stopped watching. I've played that game at E3. I have not watched a single bit of it since because, like, the whole fun of it for me is, like, I want to be surprised by the way they reimagine and contextualize things. So it's like, man, I know there's a kick-ass alligator boss in this game. I don't want to see what that alligator looks like till that motherfucker's trying to chomp at me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm going to keep moving on, except I'm going to move backwards again for a quick second. Rob, is this real? January 23rd, At the Gates is coming out? John Schaefer's At the Gates has a release date?
Yes, indeed.
For real. This has been, we talked about this game 4 years ago on a Three Moves Ahead. I was living in a dirt cheap apartment in Canada when we last talked about this game, maybe. What is this game for people who don't know what At the Gates is, and why am I so befuddled or surprised by its eventual release?
Okay. So, John Schaefer was the lead designer on Civilization V.
Yeah. Which is a big Civilization. I mean...
Remains, like, I think, their bestseller.
Agreed, yeah. Or yes. Yeah, totally. Definitely their bestseller.
Yeah. After making that game, he leaves Firaxis and he does a Kickstarter for At the Gates, which is kind of like, it has some ideas about like what to do to like take the Civ model in interesting new directions. And the setting is like kind of late Roman Empire, but it's also partially about like climate change as well. Like, one of the things that drives the fall of the Roman Empire is the fact that like it is a period of worsening winters, and people are pushing further into southern Europe, trying to like find decent farmland places they can sort of ride all this out. So the idea is, what you have here is kind of a fall, a late empire strategy game about the people sort of trying to dogpile in, and when do you make your move on the empire? When do you turn on your fellow clans or tribes and try to like take their land? So it's really like, you know, if civilization is all about like building one city and just sort of expanding outward from there, you're sort of like a giant ink blot across the map. At the Gates is much more dynamic. You're not really solving problems permanently. You are you are pausing, resting, rallying, recuperating, and then eventually you have to overturn the strategic status quo again and get moving again. This game was supposed to come out years ago, and it kind of entered development limbo, and I think a lot of people started to wonder if it was ever going to see the light of day.
Yeah, the estimated delivery on the Kickstarter was June 2014.
Yeah.
So this will be January 2019. That's a pretty big difference.
Yeah. And you know, in the meantime, like, I mean, honestly, I've talked to John about this. Yeah. He has so John and I are friendly. We've known each other for a number of years. And so like a number of things happened in his life across the development of that game that threw a lot of curveballs into the middle of it. We might talk about that more as we get closer to release, because I think he does want to sort of discuss exactly what all happened here and really the kind of toll that doing this takes. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing that happened is, he was also setting himself design challenges that he didn't really know how to solve at first. Like the initial like builds of that game that went out, people didn't really love them. People liked the idea, but the game just wasn't that fun, was kind of the feedback he was getting. And he had an interesting setting and idea for a direction of a strategy game, didn't actually know how to solve those problems. Hopefully in this new edition, he's figured that out. So I'm very curious to see what the final result actually is.
Yeah, totally. You know what, Patrick? You're a fan. I know you. You've kept.
Well, you were genuinely shocked by this revelation.
I was a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I really, truly was. Kingdom Hearts 3 is out on January 31st. I want to be clear, real quick. I just want to, I want to clear the air. Kingdom Hearts 3. Kingdom Hearts has done nothing for me in my life, but it's also done nothing to me. I'm not wounded by Kingdom Hearts. I don't think it's, like, a bad thing. I want to make sure people don't think that, like, any jabs I make towards the complexity of its story. It's like, we all like big, weird, goofy fantasy shit. Like, everything is convoluted as hell. Go to the Star Wars Wikia. Go to Wikipedia. Oh, yeah. It's all a fucking mess. I do think that, like, the fact that those Kingdom Hearts games are spread out across, like, three or four platforms, not counting the mobile game and the browser-based game.
And the titles.
And also the titles, like, encourage a sort of antagonistic and, yeah, exactly, totally. 368 over 2, or whatever, 365 over 2, whatever it is. I am very happy for the fans of the Kingdom Hearts series. They are finally getting Kingdom Hearts 3, the first, the first numbered sequel since Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, 18 years ago?
Yeah.
Some ridiculous amount of time. Kingdom Hearts 2... You
made it to PS2 game.
2005, so 13 years ago is when Kingdom Hearts 2 came out. There have been a number of other games since then. You know, you have your I guess Chain of Memories came out just before that. You have your... Sometimes I think about the Kingdom Hearts fan in 2004 who is like, oh, I loved Kingdom Hearts in 2002. Now I'm going to play Chain of Memories on the... Is that a GBA game? That's probably a GBA game. Yeah, GBA.
I believe so,
and then
yes.
Next year I'm going to get Kingdom Hearts 2. I'm going to get two Kingdom Hearts games back to back. You leave Kingdom Hearts 2 and you must be like, man, by 2008, Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be out. I'm going to have probably one little mini game between now and then too. And it has been 13 years. I'm not going to go through the list of all of the games that have come out. We did this over lunch the other day, Kato and Natalie and I, and there are a lot of those games. Patrick, how are you feeling about Kingdom Hearts 3?
I played the first two, I think, back-to-back after they came out. It was part of a collection. I just finally got around to playing them, I believe, right after I had moved to San Francisco. Like, that's when I remember I think I started in college, graduated, and then maybe finished Kingdom Hearts 2 when my wife and I had the smallest apartment in the world in San Francisco. I grew up in Disney. Like Disney Animation was like a foundational text as a child. And so the notion of an interactive like Disney world where you get to run around and be in those worlds, and that, you know, hand in hand with Disney being sort of Disney Animation being foundational to me as a kid, JRPGs made by Square, mm-hmm. Or rather Squaresoft, please.
Different time.
You know, were, you know, Final Fantasy III, Chrono Trigger were like just, I mean, I was obsessed with those games. Like that filled my summers when I was a kid. And so, I fell for that initial pitch of Kingdom Hearts, like why not both? And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, why not both? And I remember at the time playing through them, not being particularly enthralled by the mechanics. Like, I know that Kingdom Hearts 2 is a pretty big leap from 1 mechanically, but just nothing about them really stuck. And the story is in them just didn't grab me at all. So I was mostly playing them like, I want to see what the next world is.
You're a Disney fan service player.
That was most of what I was in it for. And in the time in between, I think the jabs of Kingdom Hearts like come from a place where the Kingdom Hearts fans get upset really quickly, and so like anything else, like
yeah,
it's gotcha. It's funny to like poke fun at people like because they get really upset over it. But I also like, you know, played those first two games. I am someone that is, you know, self-professed, love to see convoluted lore try and find its way to a conclusion.
Yeah.
So while I am not going to play all those games again, I am like, I did some research on like what videos to watch and like the 3 hours of stuff I can like wrap my head, get back in position yep. for. Because I don't know how good of a job Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to do or care about like catching you up. It may just rightfully assume like
yeah.
if you're playing this in, you're all the way in, you're ready to go. But yeah, I'm here for. I'm going to 100% play and beat Kingdom Hearts 3. I want to see where that nonsense goes.
I've also been in touch with at least one very good writer who is a diehard deep dive Kingdom Hearts fan who like has played all of the side games.
This is why you're trying to be nice to Kingdom Hearts now.
Why?
Are you trying to patch up the damage we did at E3? With Kingdom Hearts.
What damage did we do? I don't think we did any damage at E3. I just, you know, I'm not interested in it. I'm not. But I am interested in things in my life, and I know the joy. Last Jedi came out a year ago last week, and there's a shot at the end of that movie of Luke Skywalker looking out at two suns. And I was just like started bawling in the theater, which I did not expect to happen at all. I've not watched the original Star Wars in a decade, probably, right? And it was like, oh, wow, I have this deep well of a thing that has been burrowing in my heart for 20 years, 30 years, my whole life. And I have this deep connection to this work that is so background radiation level that I don't even think about it day to day. It's just there. And so I know what it's like to have these momentary spikes of deep, intensive love for a franchise, which is a fucking terrible way to say it, but it is the way in which we relate to media in 2018. You are listening to a podcast produced by a billionaire company that we work for, and there is like brands are in our fucking lives. And so even though I don't like Disney at all, even though like I haven't finished a Square game since they were called Squaresoft, I still mm-hmm. get what that intensity is like. And so I'm interested in that intensity, even if I have criticisms of the systems in which they're made, the ways in which branding deals happen, you know, the entirety of Disney as a company. I know what that emotional – I know where that emotional response comes from. Also, it's anime, and I'm – you know what? I got to fly the flag. I got to fly the anime flag for somebody. Someone's got to do it. So
I've just like my part. I think part of my discount of Kingdom Hearts is actually related. I mean, Brad Schumacher and I would talk about this all the time at Giant Bomb, where it's like I have such an affinity for Square, but like so have no affinity for Nomura's approach to Square. So like the moment he became sort of like the figurehead and creative lead, in so many ways at Square, like I just sort of fell off them as a company in a lot of ways because like his aesthetic, his storytelling, his can't finish a goddamn game and just ship the fucking thing. just all of it, I just kind of threw my hands up. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, while it's reductive to pinpoint a single man for being like the reason we're having a falling out for like the larger creative work of a company, like it was around that pivot to his era where he was becoming sort of the center of the Square universe that like I just fell away from the company. But I want to see, you know,
yeah,
I want to see where it goes from here. I want to see. And again, like I think I mentioned in the past, like I, you know, as much as I troll, I get excited for people getting excited about things, even if a thing doesn't excite me. But I also like seeing, I want to see it for myself as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm, we'll have both things. We'll have the genuine Kingdom Hearts fan who loves it top to bottom for what it is. And then I will also play.
And you
Kingdom
will
Hearts
also 3. Play. Yeah, 100%. I've just quickly scanned, and I think that's the last Square game I beat was Front Mission 4. Which was in 2003.
It's a PS1 or PS2?
That's a
PS2.
It's
PS2, right?
It's the last one that was localized here. 5 has a fan patch that I've been like waiting to play for years. I have it on my computer. I imported the game years ago and just like, oh, it's all in Japanese. Whoops. And so there's a fan patch for it. One of these days I'm going to play Front Mission 5, and that means I'll have the last Square game I'll have completed will have been from 2005. So I'm working through. You know, I played other ones. I just haven't finished. You know, Fortune Street. I played Fortune Street. Does that count? Probably not.
That's a sure.
That's a cool game.
We need to go faster.
I know,
this
we
list.
Do. Let's keep moving. God Eater 3 is Monster Hunter, but anime, sure. Trials Rising, I don't know that I need another Trials game. Crackdown 3 is a real thing, and it's coming out.
Sure. I'm curious to see what that single player... I'm just curious to see what that thing ends up being. It could be a trash fire. I think there are reasons to think it could be a trash fire.
Saw,
but I'm also hoping that maybe it's come together at the last second in a way that will surprise
us. I saw
us.
A demo of it 2 years ago now, and I was like, oh, this is ambitious. Like, some of the storytelling... Not, like, the storytelling.
But who knows what that game
but
even
that's
is
that's exactly
now
my
from,
question. It's like, there was a degree...
It's Move Studios.
There was a degree of, like, ah, the city will change around you in interesting ways. Where I was like, yikes, this seems like a lot of work to pull off well. And maybe it'd be easier to cut some of this stuff. So, we'll see. Dead or Alive 6... I don't know what the I'm curious what the fighting game scene thinks of that series in general. I just don't know. There's been such a renaissance of non, like, Tekken is in a great place right now. Dragon Ball is in a mm-hmm. great place right now. Like, there are lots of non Street Fighter games that have made plays at gaining popularity, and partially because they're great to watch. Like, Tekken 7 is a great fucking game to watch competitively. I love watching Dragon Ball FighterZ. But I'm not sure where Dead or Alive fits in there. Not an expert.
I want to mention that we overlooked that the third episode of The Walking Dead will be coming out in January from
Skybound.
Skybound having cobbled together at least some elements of the team that was working on that series. Not everyone. It's unclear. From my own understanding of that game's production is that the third episode was like pretty far along, in which it was like not... It was very realistic to understand a team coming in and getting that to the finish line. Whereas like episodes 4 and 5, like especially 5, like I think it had maybe done a table read at the time that Telltale shut down. Like there was no assets built, like there was no scripting done. So as someone that really, really genuinely liked the first episode, I haven't played the second because I was like, well, what's the point of playing that if I'm not going to get the rest? I'm curious to see both from like a production, like bigger picture, like labor, like question standpoint, what that thing is and where things fall out. And then as someone that was enjoying the storytelling arc they were going for the final season, I'm at least happy that will see a conclusion for Clementine.
Just real quick, because I don't think it's on the list you're working from, Austin.
No,
supposedly
not.
In February we get The Occupation, which is that adventure game from the developers behind Ether One. But The Occupation is kind of a like political thriller set basically in the wake of a terror attack and on the eve of the passage of like a Patriot Act style bill in a country that's like an analog for Great Britain. And the trailers look really good. We ran a really cool preview of it earlier this year.
Right.
It just looks like it might be my shit, at least. Like, you know I'm always there for my moody 70s-style political thriller.
Yeah, yeah.
The Occupation looks like that kind of game. And that is something that I'm really hoping pans out.
Yeah, I will definitely keep an eye on that. As Patrick said, we need to keep moving here. So that day, the day that Crackdown 3, Dead or Alive 6, Far Cry New Dawn. This is all February 15th. Far Cry New Dawn, you can go back and listen to what we said during the right after the Game Awards about what we feel about that. Nothing's changed. Jump Force, which I watched a trailer for today. Jump Force
That's the anime mashup,
Right. So Shonen Jump is a long-running kind of manga. Is Shonen Jump weekly? It's a weekly, right? Yeah. Okay. That collects kind of issue by issue a lot of different kind of shonen comics, which are like boys' adventure comics, is like the very broad and reductive way I'm describing that. So that is your Dragon Balls, your One Pieces, your Death Notes, your what else is Shonen Jump? Why am I blanking? Bleach? Is Bleach Shonen Jump?
Yeah.
I believe it is. Action anime where people's hearts are filled with, you know, hot blood and justice and friendship and love. And it is like a big crossover fighting game, but with like character customization. I definitely saw somebody make a Yu-Gi-Oh type character who was doing Goku Spirit Bomb. So I'm all the way here for it. I thought it was going to be a game where you have like 8 characters to pick from or like 12 characters to pick from, and you like, you fight them in an arena instead of arena battler. And now there's a story mode and there's a demon. There's a whole bunch of shit going on. So I'm going to fucking play that stupid game. God damn it. Also out that day, Metro Exodus, which got moved up a week, I believe. I believe that game got moved up to February.
Yeah, to February 15th.
Yeah,
so nervous.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to go see it in January. There's a January event coming up. So I'm going to go take a peek at that and hope that I can come away being like, yeah, it looks great.
I played 45 minutes, an hour of it at PAX, and it was just, by the time I got 45 minutes to it, I was just settling into it. So it was just,
I definitely felt rushed like when I played it, but like the I had an hour long demo. Maybe it's the same thing where you're like out in this like church in a marsh in the world. I don't think that's going to show particularly well in like an abridged like 45 minute 1 hour seating, but at the same time, what I did play didn't like, and I am like, when it comes to Metro, like that series, like that could just be that it could open with a 5 minute cutscene of a character talking about like rude things they've done to my mother, and I'd still be like, oh hell yeah, like let's do this. I love Metro.
This is my more shame.
Yeah, totally. And so I didn't have that reaction. I'm worried.
I'm gonna be me real quick and just note one thing that just struck me about the Shonen Jump game, which is there's like a Shonen Jump weekly app that just finally hit in English that brought a ton of like Dragon Ball and Naruto and My Hero Academia stuff to US and or to English readers for the first time yesterday. So I'm super, this feels like a big play for that entire company. So I just wanted to make that statement because I'm curious to see if that can find an inroad the way that comics have found an inroad to new audiences in the last 6 years. I'm not saying this is the same thing as the Avengers, obviously, but I think there is a world in which that's the case. So yeah, Metro, and then we don't get a week off because the next week is Anthem. The next week is Anthem, and everything seems to have gotten out of its way, which I didn't think was the case because I guess Metro was on that day originally. I thought something else was on that day originally. Maybe it got pushed back a week. But like Anthem is on the 22nd, and I am so curious about Anthem. I watched a big stream about the loot system in that game that got me excited last week. There's some cool builds. There's some cool like, oh, okay, I see how the loot in this game is distinct from something like Destiny, but still has some comparisons to be made, right? I saw somebody make... you can make a build where... The guy made a build where, you know, in Destiny, you have abilities. You're like, oh, I have a grenade and I have, like, a melee ability. Anthem is a similar way. He had, like, a rocket launcher on his right arm, like a little rocket wrist rocket thing, and then a grenade on his left. And there's a billion other things that you could do there. Not a billion, but there's, you know, other types of weapons to equip their special abilities, lightning strikes, etc. And what he had was an ability that was, like, when you're hovering, your cooldowns for those abilities are half as long. And so he built all of his other stuff towards reducing the heat from flying around so that he could fly for longer periods, right? But then there was another build that he was talking about making where he could just be really tanky and where, like, doing melee attacks would have given him shields to resist incoming damage. He put on, like, a shield briefly that just straight up bounced projectiles away from his, like, hovering exosuit thing that looked really cool.
Okay.
So, Excuse me, I'm choking, thinking about mechs.
Choking up a little bit.
And so, like, those are the things I wanted to see. I don't want to see, like, the numbers going up. I mean, that's part of it, and that will scratch a certain itch where it's like, oh, yeah, you do twice as much damage. You do extra fire damage. They also showed the combo system, which is really neat. If you've played, like, Mass Effect or Dragon Age, you know that one of the things that in those games you can do sometimes is, like, put enough of a status effect on somebody that they get the status effect, and then you can, like, detonate that status effect. So you have them, like, frozen, and then you do enough damage, and they just, like, fucking shatter, right? Or they're fiery, and you detonate it, and the fire does big AoE damage to everything around it. They were showing that off and talking about how the classes actually do different things with it. So, like, the ranger, who's the starting class, does, when you detonate, you do, like, direct damage. But the storm or whatever, the elemental mate, like the cyber wizard, spreads the debuff to everything around it. I'm like, okay, I can see how this stuff could end up being really fun to play in a group. I still have big questions about that world, about those characters. Like, nothing they've shown me has made me care outside of, like, armor designs and the right. flight feels good, you know, from when we played at E3.
I'm still worried about the story.
Me too, 100%.
But I'm ready to go all in me on too. That game.
And be disappointed if I'm so disappointed, but I want to go all in, you know?
Yes. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready for it. Like, I've prepped myself. All right, I'm ready to put 80 hours in this game. Like, I just want to do it.
Totally.
And I'm hoping it hooks. I remain excited. I'm, you know, it sounds like maybe they'll probably do more of those, you know, betas and alphas or whatever as we get closer. And I'm hoping to get a chance to get more time on it than just the, you know, the really exciting, like, 20 minutes we had at E3, but that was just to go, oh, it's cool to move around in this game. But, you know, that's just
totally.
One.
Anno 1800 hits, which is another, I like the Anno series pretty well. It's a city builder. This one's 1800, so Industrial Revolution. I haven't seen anything about this yet, but you'll find me there on day two or three playing that game, building some fucking cities. Rob, have you seen anything about 1800 yet?
Not really. I mean, no, because the Anno series is very similar in terms of, like, what it's expressing about city builders and the way you're sort of building the society. And it's sort of weird commentary on, like, you get points for, like, creating a glamorous class of, like, rich socialites who do
you
jack
sure
shit.
Do.
Like, literally do nothing.
Yep.
They are of no value except for scoring.
And you got to give them what they need.
Yeah, they're super fucking fussy. And so it's all about building this resource scaffold to, like, have this fucking, like, Snowpiercer-esque, like, final car riding your fucking urban train through time. At the same time, these games are fucking gorgeous. They're challenging as hell. 1800, I'm ready to build a city with that architecture. Yeah. End of, you know, sort of waning eras of the Enlightenment as the Industrial Revolution is starting to come online. Give me that.
I'm very curious to see how they tackle some of that stuff. Continuing to move, Dirt Rally 2.0. I've never played any of the Dirt Rally games. I'm sorry, Drew Scanlon. I know you're a fan.
Austin, do you still have a meeting in like 8 minutes?
It's Joel. I can move it.
Okay.
You know, I can push it a little bit. Really, what I have is a meeting at 2:30, and the one with Joel just can't run into that one. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's fine, because Rob and I have to record a podcast before I have to leave anyway. So, okay, I just wanted to see where we're at.
We're not going to take a break. Kato's like, we should take a break. No, we're going to finish before we can take a break. You're going to have to sideload
a
break.
The rest of the year is going to be a lightning round.
Left Alive. We're just talking about Front Mission. It's a Front Mission stealth action game in which...
That game's going to be bad. It's going to be bad.
Patrick, let me hold out hope. Toe Jam and Earl are coming back, baby.
That's going to be bad.
They're back, and you love them. Rob Zachney, Total War 3.
Hell
Kingdoms.
Yeah, I am ready for this. That showed great at E3. I think it's going to be awesome. I'm really curious about how this whole, like, we're going to give you the classic Three Kingdom, Romance of the Three Kingdoms story with the fucking, like, magical powers and, like, pseudo-mysticism. And then we're going to realism mode, where your characters can't apparently, what's that thing that one dude does? Eats his eye in a battle and then whoops people's ass?
Zhihao Dun pulls his eye out, and to lose an eye is nothing for the world. Okay, anyway, continue.
Yeah, point is, so they're giving you two versions where it's like, okay, one, like, realistic as far as, like, a Total War game goes, and there's the other version where it's like, yeah, okay, look, we know that you guys love those Koei games too. We love them too, so fine, fuck it. Here's our spin on that. I'm curious how that's going to work out, but the game looked fucking awesome.
Devil May Cry 5, speaking of things that look kind of fucking awesome.
Man, that looks really, really good.
Did you play the demo at all?
I didn't play the demo, but I played a demo of it at a PAX and was, like, really into it stylistically, aesthetically. It has a cool and fun tone, even as I will continue to stand for Ninja Theory's DMC. I think that was a great game. But this also looks fantastic in a way that is actually not that dissimilar. And also, go read some interviews with the like lead designer on Devil May Cry 5, in which he stands for Ninja Theory and says like they actually took a lot of that game as a foundational sort of how they built this game.
That makes sense to me.
So, yeah, I mean, you have a motorcycle for a, that turns into
axes,
a weapon.
Two different axes.
So,
yeah.
Fuck
Tom Clancy's The Division 2 is March 15th. That's going to be, I'm curious. That first game got its hooks into me for all of the criticisms I made of it and will continue to make of it. Setting that game in D.C. in 2019, you know, is going to be one of those things. It's like, all right, what are you doing with this? What are the factions? What, you know, so much of that first Division was communicated through backdrop stuff. You know, who are the factions that are trying to fight over the city? What are their agendas? What are their ideologies? What do those things say about the politics and the theming and the ideas about what this game has about humanity are? So a lot of that work will be done. Will be one of those things that, like, as we get closer and they start doing their 30-second teasers about like the True Patriot faction believes that blah blah blah, and they have submachine guns. Will like already help set the stage, but I'm very curious to get my hands on it and see. And also just curious to see like if they bring in some of the stuff I really loved about some of their expansion content, right? Like obviously I don't think this game is set in the winter the way that the Division 1 was, but that survival mode that they released was really really good. And I'm curious to see if they continue doing stuff in that direction. Continuing the Sinking City. Which is the other Lovecraft game, also hits that year, or that month, right? Which is...
the more ambitious,
open
like,
world.
Open world-y.
Yeah. Non-linear, at least. There's a city for you to explore. It has different neighborhoods you travel between. It looked really cool. I thought I was really impressed with what I saw at E3. At the same time, like, you know, it may also be a very loving adaptation of Lovecraft that isn't necessarily bringing a ton of critique or perspective on it.
It seems that way based on like the cinematic trailers and like the way
they sent us an email
like,
that was like introduction to H.P. Lovecraft, the father of cosmic horror. Yeah. I'm like, he sure is.
Like, all the marketing is like tentacles and giant sea monsters. Like, okay, we know what this is.
We'll see how they do. I'm curious. Yeah. Shout outs to Frogwares, I guess. Is that the Frogwares one or is the other one the Frogwares? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're good at making detective-y games.
Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. Ooh. Tenchu Souls. I've played this game a couple of times now. I'm really enjoying it. Every demo I've had has been really cool. I'm eager for another one of these, and the combat changes that are in this game seem really fucking cool. Like, there is a sense of momentum that it feels like it's adding on to the stuff that they did in Bloodborne. This is the new FromSoft game. Obviously, I should have set that up a little bit better. Maybe not. The idea of being very active in your blocking and parrying, making people learn how to do that stuff, but also giving them a little more flexibility in terms of the windows of parrying and also in terms of your life as a ninja. You get to like come back from the dead without losing progress. Via like a kind of resurrection ability. You can't do that an infinite amount of times, but you can do that a number of times in a row. And that means that you can kind of like not, I don't want to say it seems like you can push your way through that game, brute force it, but it does seem like it gives you a little bit of leeway as you're learning the ropes and getting better. The one boss fight that was in the demo that I played was really fucking good. I'm so excited to see more of this game. And I'm also kind of glad I haven't seen more of this game, right? Like, I don't need to see more of that game before it comes out. Totally.
I'm excited because, like, when I play Dark Souls, I played your standard, you know, big heavy armor, sword, shield, roll around a lot. Played Bloodborne. It got me out of that comfort zone because it didn't let me use a shield. It makes parrying more integral to the experience, but it's still not a requirement. And I've always resisted parrying because of the time investment and because you could kind of sidestep it. And so I am excited for this game to say, nah, like it's going to yank me by the collar and be like, you're going to figure this out, because I have found that has paid residuals in other games where like I have become more aggressive when I play, like in Dark Souls 3, I was way more aggressive and played way more like a Bloodborne character or just a more balanced character because of my experience with Bloodborne. Totally. And so I'm excited to have the game like try and get me to understand parrying and integrate that into the way it's
just like reading enemies, knowing when they're going to attack, thinking about how that's just going. Anything that gets me more into that mode is good. You know, again, like the fact that we played a bunch of Monster Hunter last year probably helps in some ways. Mortal Kombat 11 is next year in April. I don't have anything to say about that besides we saw that trailer. Days Gone, also a game that I don't think looks particularly good, and every time I've played it, I've not been.
I will play it,
April
though.
April 26th, lots of zombies, I guess. I haven't seen any. I've seen 12 zombies in that game in the time that I played it. I saw 12 zombies and like 30 dudes with crossbows shooting at me. So, sure. Rage 2 in May, colorful post-apocalyptic shooters, they're here to stay. I'm more excited about Rage 2.
Definitely going to endure and stand the test of time.
Oh my god. I'm more curious about that, I'll say, than about Far Cry New Dawn.
They've shown very little of the open world part of that game, which I think has been a huge mistake, because the shooting parts that I played at E3, which was like mostly like go into an area and shoot a bunch of guys and kind of play with a couple of the powers. It wasn't bad, but it was certainly not what I was excited when I heard that Avalanche was making a Rage game. And so I came out pretty negative, but not on the game. More just, I think they showed the wrong slice of this. Because this is just going to be an element of a larger game that will clearly have
I hope. This has showed some vehicle
stuff.
So I
don't know.
Like, I hope that it's not basically just a combat vehicle racer shooter thing plus the first person combat. Like, I hope that there is some thread that brings those things together in a way that makes me excited. Team Sonic Racing and Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled are out on the same or a month apart from each other. Team Sonic Racing was okay when I played it. I don't know that my first impressions were as strong as they were for Sonic All-Stars Racing, which I think is like genuinely a
it
really
got a
good
pretty
game.
Substantial delay,
yeah,
didn't it? Like, that game is supposed to come out this year.
Yeah, so I'm a little cautious on that. Phoenix Point, the follow-up, the new Julian Gollop XCOM style tactics game about fighting Lovecraftian horrors that are breaking through. That looks really hardcore in some ways. It looks like very like crunchy. We'll see.
I wish I'd seen something that like unequivocally did it for me. That's
me too.
Just, that's where 100%. I'm at. Like, if it's a great game, I'm probably gonna play it. Like, I love good tactics, but there's nothing about it that like fired the imagination.
Shenmue 3 in August.
Speaking of firing the imagination.
And we're going to keep on moving. Shenmue had its...
It's sort of like Kingdom Hearts. I'm happy for those fans to get some resolution, totally. Even if I have zero confidence that game may be any fun to play, and I think people should temper their expectations.
Fans don't seem
over,
to have any confidence
like,
that's going
to
be the case either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
this is the...
It hasn't looked very good.
Like, the people you'd expect to be like Shenmue defenders, like... They're heading toward this, like, guys heading toward Omaha Beach. Like, is how the entire run-up to this release feels.
Let's look ahead really quick, and we'll all pick two of these things. We'll go around Robin here. We'll start with you, Rob. There's unscheduled releases. Pick one of these things that you're kind of curious about. There are dozens of other games on this list that don't have dates yet. What here jumps out at you is something you're actually kind of curious about?
Oh, gosh. I'll punt on my first one. Imperator Rome. I am really curious to see Paradox like tackle the Roman Empire again. I think Europa Universalis Rome was regarded as an interesting and weird, like it's not an EU game, that's just its title. It was regarded as an interesting way to take on the challenges of like modeling Roman era politics. I'm curious to see how they do that now with a way bigger budget and way more design experience under their belt, because it's an interesting world and some of the things that they've said going into it have me really excited to see what they do.
Totally. Patrick.
Man of Medan,
which
is the first of a trilogy, but planned to be more than that if it's successful, from the folks that did Until Dawn, which I think is a really tremendous accomplishment in terms of sort of playing around with the tropes of horror and making it enjoyable for folks that can understand the wink, nods, versions, and also just Like, it's a fun group activity video game, and I'm bummed we're not getting a direct sequel to that, but it sounds like Man of Medan and the sort of, like, shorter-end experiences they're going to do over the next couple of years, which actually I think is a smart move, because Until Dawn is, like, a 10 to 12-hour game, and it, like, I think these things would work better if they, not 90 minutes, but something, you know, between 90 minutes and, you know, 10 hours, somewhere in like the 5, 6 to 7 range, which is what they've said they're doing with this. I'm curious to see how, where they go with that specific concept. There was just, the horror genre is just full of just the most trite shit that there is a lot you could do. And there are so many different worlds and setups and premises that you could play with. So I cannot wait to see what they actually do with that going forward.
The first one for me is Dreams, which I think is about to enter a private beta for backer. Not like a, you know, all betas are limited in some ways.
Stockholders of the Sony Corporation.
They're going into beta. There's a bigger beta hitting in January, is my understanding. Maybe it's I was going to say late December. It's late December now, so January. That's a game that really stunned me at the pre-E3 Judges Week thing. I saw it again at PAX, and it looked really cool. I think it's going to open a lot of conversations and tough conversations around user-generated content and ownership and a bunch of other shit. But I also think that it seems as a tool for creativity really incredible. And so I'm so excited to see what people do with that thing. We'll see. That should be sometime in 2019, hopefully. Rob, one more.
Fine. I'll be the one to take this bullet. I will burn my pick because we have to. MechWarrior. MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries. I love those games. Like, pretty much, like, MechWarrior 2 through 4. Like, they all do different things, and I like everything they put down. I think the Mercenary model has always been the best one for them because they provide this, much as you see in Battletech, it provides an interesting context for combat and actions when, like, you know, shit getting blown apart is, like, actual, like, resources you can use or have to replace. The game looks gorgeous. So, like, we saw some footage from it from their MechCon, the site of, you know, battle mechs doing their glorious dance of death in Field of Golden Wheat. Like, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks
also
good.
Also, saw a few things that concerned me, like the fact the mech AI seemed completely perplexed by, like, dense urban settings.
Yeah.
And they appear to be leaning into dense urban settings. But looks cool.
Yeah, agreed. Patrick, one more from this list.
Ori and the Will of the Wisps. The first Ori, I think, is a, like, top 10, possibly top 5 of that type of game. It was gorgeous. It was incredibly fun to play. I knock it. That game doesn't let you, when you get to the end, it locks off parts of the map that you cannot go back to. So, like, crucial to those types of games is, like, oh, you finished it, I'm gonna go back and, like, sweep up other stuff that I didn't get around to. Like, that is, like, core to the DNA of how you build those games, and they fucking block off one of those sections. Like, I'm still annoyed that I never quite got around to being able to fill out that whole map and see everything. But it's just a really smart game, and the bits I've played of the sequel seem like they aren't just doing another one of those. They are trying to build on that in some really cool ways. I mean, it looks gorgeous. It sounds incredible, but mechanically they are doing some really fun things in terms of the, it's a game about momentum, and they're building on that in some really smart ways that I'm super curious to see where it ends up landing. It's a game made for me, and I am here for it.
Sounds good. Boy, this is a tough one. There's only one spot left, and there's games here that I'm excited about, but we don't know anything about. Animal Crossing theoretically is next year, but I can't say that because who the fuck knows what that even looks like. There's stuff that we've already talked about, like The Outer World, which, again, just go back and listen to our Game of the Year one. So I'm going to continue to just be me all the way and say Daemon X Machina, the other big mech game next year. That is the Switch game that I'm not hyper confident about in terms of how it plays, but I am hyper confident about it in terms of its style. It looks incredible. There's some cool music. It has an incredible creative team on it of people who have made who've touched everything from the Armored Core series to some of my favorite mecha shows. I'm going to hold out hope that game comes together in a way that is something special. We will see. Next year holds a lot for us all. Like, there's a lot of stuff that is theoretically coming out next year, you know? And we'll have to see which of those things actually hit a date. I don't know if Campo Santo has just vanished into the ether of Steam or Valve, or if what is their new one called? Valley in the Valley of the Gods is real, if it's going to hit. Who knows about so many other things, Fire Emblems and Gears of Wars. And remember that Star Wars game that Respawn is making?
Yeah, that'll come out. I'm excited about that.
That's next year?
I think
that's 2020.
Cool. No, EA's financials require that game to come out next fall. That game will come out next
Anthem
fall.
Or Anthem
blows
up, and Anthem saves the day for EA, like the way they're desperately hoping it will.
I've heard that game is cool. I'm excited to see Control. Like, I love anything that Remedy does. So, like, this seems like they're going off the deep end on that one in a way that I'm excited about. I'm trying to see other, like, you know. Oh, that new Wolfenstein
also,
like,
questions.
I love Wolfenstein. So, like, the two daughters going out there and fucking
Let's
up some Nazis, like, hey, I might need that in 2019.
100%.
Just like I've needed it in
years
prior.
You gotta start training Jessica for the future, Patrick. You need some lessons. There's two other things we need to just very briefly, 20 seconds. You each get to pick one of the following two things. I want your thoughts.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Sonic the Hedgehog, November 8th, 2019, Paramount Pictures. What are your thoughts? Rob Zachney.
I try not to have them.
About Sonic and Sonic's beautiful legs. You don't want to talk about Sonic's thigh gap with me today?
He doesn't want to talk about the thoughts he's having Sonic.
Patrick Klepek, Detective Pikachu, May 10th, 2019. That's so soon.
Oh, day one. Day one. Hey, I'm going to tell my mom, put that on your fucking calendar. You are watching Jessica. I'm not going to get distracted by my kid at that movie. I'm ready for it.
I just need to say real quick, I just looked on the Wikipedia, and the person who's directing Sonic the Hedgehog is named Jeff Fowler, and I misread it as Joel Fowler, and I was like, has Joel been stepping out to direct the Sonic movie for the last year? Because if so, I want to know details.
What have they done before? Give me IMDb quick.
They did animation research and development on Where the Wild Things Are.
I liked that movie. All right. Uh-huh. Good. Thanks for the update.
Well, you asked
Austin.
You asked me what they done. And that is it. They did a short called Gopher Broke in 2004.
So you like rodents. Interesting. Well, I think you might be the director we're looking for a new project. I can't tell you much about it just yet. But it's a well-known rodent known for speed.
He was in an episode of Gilmore Girls in 2002 as Bob.
Sonic was? God damn, that show went places.
Yeah, he gets around, man. He gets around, totally. All right, he's from Normal, Illinois. Is that near you, Patrick? Are you near Normal?
No, he's from middle of Normal's a real city down there, but it's University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is where I went to school, and that is right next to Normal, Illinois. Okay.
All right,
that's cool.
I'm coming around. He also did a short called A Gentleman's Duel, which seems to be about Victorian mechs.
Hello?
Hi.
Tell me more about this. Is this online anywhere?
Yeah, I'll link you.
I'm just imagining, like, what if it's like The Duelist, but with Max? What if he made a short, like, version of The Duelists?
Uh-huh.
But with Max.
This looks all right. I'm going to link you to this.
That changes everything.
All right. I think on that note, we should call it quits. This is the last time I'll talk to y'all this year, obviously. And so until you, well, we'll talk on Discord and all that. But thank you both for having a great podcast year. With me. We already recorded the waypoints that'll hit later this week. We've done some fun stuff in podcasting this year. And thank you for listening, and thank you for hanging out, and thank you for participating, Rob and Patrick. Thank you to Kato also really killing it with production, getting a lot of production work done ahead of time so that you can rest and everyone can rest over the holiday break. As always, shout outs in this case to Mello for letting us use a track, or for composing a track for us for these holiday seasons. This like persona meets holiday stuff is incredibly festive and good that he put together. You can find out more from Mello at twomellomakes.bandcamp.com or at mellomakes on Twitter. I may have gotten those backwards. I always forget. You find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Patrick, how about you?
At Patrick Klubik.
Rob Zachney.
At Rob Zachney.
Follow Waypoint at twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.vice.com. That is it for us. Any final thoughts? Any last words? Someone take it from me.
take this burden from
me. What do you think is the mech equivalent of the, like, open-handed slap and dropping of the gauntlet? The glove.
What do you do?
Yeah, like, what does a mech do to, like...
You unload, like, you just... I think you
grab, like, a camo tarp and just, like...
And you just throw it off?
Yeah.
You slap it. I was thinking it's more of the, like, you eject all of your heat at once, so there's just this, like, steam, like, cloud, or, like... Maybe you release a weapon and let it drop to the ground to be like, it's fisticuffs time.
I need a fucking mech series that's about, like, 18th century fops.
Me too.
Like my fucking Richard E. Grant, Scarlet Pimpernel ass mech series. That's what I'm here for.
Stick around. 2019, season 6, please give us that. Friends at the table, I'll be there. Don't worry about it. All right, that's going to do for us. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.